This is the Breaker.News podcast for the 3rd of December 2017. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News. The Breaker is your source for opinion, analysis, and news about British Columbia issues and institutions. Let us stop the secrecy and unravel the spin. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this episode, regular features such as the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines from Hawaii, Hong Kong, and Singapore, Cascadia Calling, headlines from BC, Washington, and Oregon, The Big Deal feature, an interview with Duff Conacher, co-founder of Democracy Watch, and ending with a virtual Nanaimo bar for someone that deserved it this week. Now, Is It Just Me? Is it just me, or is the BC NDP patting itself too hard on the back after the end of its first legislative session in government since 2001? Premier John Horgan's post-election accord with Green leader Andrew Weaver ended the 16-year BC Liberal dynasty in a dramatic non-confidence vote on June 29th. During the 9-week fall session, the NDP did take steps forward in improving how BC is governed, but they didn't go far enough. They banned corporate and union donations to provincial and municipal politicians and parties, and they capped annual donations at $1,200. But they left the door open for corporate and union bosses to still donate big money through their friends, relatives, and subordinates. They banned former cabinet ministers and their aides from lobbying for 2 years after leaving office, but MLAs can still become lobbyists the day after they quit. They didn't even table the promised duty to document law. They promised to give teeth to the freedom of information law that the previous BC Liberal government chose to break so often as it descended deeper into corruption and cronyism. You could argue that the Horgan horde is too busy cleaning up the mess left behind by the Clark clique. Attorney General David Eby's hiring of anti-money laundering expert Peter German to investigate casino crime is positive. But Transportation Minister Claire Trevena does not seem to have done anything to investigate more than $500 million of cost overruns on the Portman Bridge project. British Columbians, even NDP members at the party's Victoria Convention, are screaming out for an anti-corruption inquiry. Will you resolve to order one in 2018, Mr. Horgan? Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim, where we go around the Pacific Rim and look at news headlines. First, in the Honolulu Star Advertiser, William Cole reports that at Pearl Harbor, the first attack siren test in decades raises goosebumps and concerns. Hawaii residents and visitors heard a siren test on December 1st that has not blared since the Cold War in the 1980s, an attack warning signal that state officials resurrected in light of the North Korean nuclear missile threat. At 11:45 a.m., about 180 sirens on Oahu and 385 statewide blared the usual steady-tone attention alert that is meant for threats such as hurricanes or tsunamis, but that was followed by the wavering one-minute attack warning signal to alert the public to a possible North Korean nuclear attack. At the USS Arizona Memorial, which will commemorate the 76th anniversary of the December 7, 1941 attack on Pearl Harbor, mainland visitors reacted with goosebumps and concern after hearing the attack warning siren test. The attack warning means people should seek immediate shelter in the most substantial structure possible because a North Korean missile could arrive in Hawaii just 20 minutes after launch. In the Straits Times of Singapore, the headline is, Bling It On! Children of Asia's richest not shy about flaunting it. They live their lives online and are not shy about showing off their precious toys and presents at exotic places that most other people can only dream about. Meet the princelings and princesses of regional political and business leaders. The daughter of tycoon Vincent Tan of the Berjaya Group, Crisis, often documents her travels through Instagram stories. Forbes valued her father, Vincent Tan, one of Malaysia's most recognizable tycoons, at $820 million U.S. Crisis has recently engaged to Mr. Falik Nazimuddin. She had her pre-wedding photo shoot in Venice, Italy. Granddaughter of President Rodrigo Duterte, 17-year-old Isabel, stirred a hornet's nest when she posted on Instagram photos of herself with a $3,000 Celine bag and donning a $750 pair of Chanel ballerina flats. She has another Celine bag worth about $2,700 US and $620 Gucci Ace sneakers. Narashman Najib, 27, is the son of Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak. He went to the Victoria's Secret fashion show in Shanghai and created a stir amid reports that several models have been denied entry into China. And finally, Yupina Ng in the South China Morning Post, under the headline, "I can communicate with dogs, cats, and cockroaches. Hong Kong pet whisperer's confessions." Li Hu Quan claims she can talk to almost any type of animal, including cockroaches. The self-proclaimed psychic says she can tell what pets are feeling just by looking at their photos, and that is how she makes a living. Pet owners seeking to know whether their animals are happy usually have to provide basic information such as their pet's age and gender, in addition to a photo. Li also claims in one instance she was able to, quote, "influence the mind of cockroaches," end quote. Li said, "I saw lots of cockroaches crawling towards me," she recalls of the moment on a minibus ride. "So I told them they would die if they kept running towards me, and their only way out was to turn around. They eventually ran away." That's what she said. Pet psychics in Hong Kong, where the number of people keeping dogs and cats is on the rise, can earn tens of thousands of Hong Kong dollars a year. Li charges pet owners about 300 Hong Kong dollars for a 15-minute phone or web conference. The marketing graduate turned pet psychic, whose Facebook page has gained about 3,000 likes and 3,000 followers to date, gets 2 to 5 cases daily. That's Around the Rim for this week. It's time for Cascadia Calling on the Breaker.news podcast, where we look at headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Seattle Times, Jim Brunner reported, "Where did all the voters go? Record low turnout in last election." Nearly two-thirds of Washington voters sat out the November 7th election, setting a new low mark for turnout. Just 37.1% of the state's 4.3 million registered voters participated, according to Washington's Secretary of State. Results were certified this week. That beat out the previous record general election low set in 2015, when turnout reached about 38.5%. Washington State has tried to make voting easy, mailing ballots to every registered voter and giving them weeks to send them in. King County and others also have expanded the use of ballot drop boxes. Nevertheless, about 2.6 million voters dumped their ballots in the trash or recycling bins instead of taking part in this year's elections to pick mayors, city councils, and school boards across the state. This fall was the first year since 1985 that Washington had no initiatives or referendums on the ballot. Voter interest typically shoots up in presidential election years and dips in midterms, and even further in odd-year elections. In 2008, the state set a record with 84.6% turnout when Barack Obama was elected a first term as president. In Portland, KOIN-TV reports that Christmas tree prices go up while supply goes down. Have you purchased your Christmas tree yet? If not, you may have a hard time finding one, as Oregon farmers are reporting a serious shortage of trees this season, causing the prices to go up. Quote, "Oregon is the hot spot for Christmas tree growers," quote, said Allison Bruns, a member of the Oregon Christmas Tree Growers Association. Growers are seeing a shortage now, partially due to the recession in 2008 and 2009, when farmers weren't putting enough trees in the ground, according to Bruns, who also helps run her family farm. Trees typically take 8 to 10 years to grow. According to farmers, trees are selling anywhere from $5 to $10 more this year. And finally, in Kamloops This Week, Andrea Klassen reports that Kamloops Council is urged to penalize stores selling pot. $10,000 fine proposed. Kamloops City Council will be asked to increase fines and rewrite its zoning bylaw to crack down on stores selling marijuana. In a report to council, Planning and Development Manager Rod Martin said the city needs to find ways to manage dispensaries, which have set up across the city and operate without business licenses, now and after marijuana becomes legal in 2018. But the new regulations aren't the legitimization that shop owners and their clients have been calling for, in which the city would grant business licenses and create restrictions, as Vancouver and other communities have done. Instead, the report to council recommends increasing fines for businesses operating without a license to 50 times the current maximum. Instead of the current $200 penalty, bylaw officers could fine businesses as much as $10,000. The report also recommends adding specific definitions for marijuana-based businesses to the city's zoning bylaws so they can be prohibited until council decides where it wants pot being sold and what regulations should be in place. That will also depend on how the BC government decides to regulate the drug. That's Cascadia Calling for this week on the Breaker.News podcast. This week's big deal interview on the Breaker.News podcast is with Duff Conacher, co-chair of Democracy Watch. Democracy Watch is Canada's leading citizen group that advocates democratic reform, government accountability, and corporate responsibility. I began by asking Conacher about Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's controversial Christmas vacation last year to the Aga Khan's island in the Bahamas, and this fall's conflict of interest scandal swirling around Finance Minister Bill Morneau. They came to power just over 2 years ago, promising to be better than the last one. They seem to be having some serious ethical problems.
Yes, they are, and it's mainly because there's been lots of talk about ethics, but not much walking the talk. And the rules are full of loopholes. They're weakly enforced by the lapdog ethics commissioner, lobbying commissioner, and as a result, unless you really encourage people to walk the talk, they know they can get away with anything, and the ethics commissioner and lobbying commissioner don't stop them from getting away with anything. And so you end up in scandals because the politicians, especially new ones, and people coming out of the business world like Bill Morneau, in the business world, you don't face these kind of rules. You can hire your son or daughter to work for you. You can do stuff secretly. And the rules are not very well enforced on insider trading and things like that. And so those people come in, they don't think about ethics first and foremost. No one reminds them. And boom, all of a sudden, bunch of scandals. It's not surprising at all. And I warned the government about it in an op-ed that I had published in December 2015, that the talk was not enough to make people walk the talk.
They promised in their platform in 2015 to run a better administration than the previous one. The Stephen Harper administration was full of scandal. Now it seems to be developing that the Trudeau administration is, and part of that is the weak oversight and the lack of checks and balances that are strong enough, as well as the people that should be doing the oversight. Can you talk about the situations where we have the ethics commissioner and her apparent conflict of interest too?
Yes. Well, starting with the law, it's full of loopholes. It's legal for cabinet ministers and top government officials to actually profit from their own decisions. That's how bad the Conflict of Interest Act is. It really should be called the Almost Impossible to Be in a Conflict of Interest Act. The Lobbying Act should be called the Some Lobbying Act because the secret lobbying is illegal. So you put those two together and you're going to end up with scandals, especially when you have an ethics commissioner and a lobbying commissioner, both of whom are currently serving on six-month renewable contracts with the Trudeau government. The lobbying commissioner is going to be replaced, maybe. We're not sure exactly when it's going to happen. The Liberals have nominated someone, but the opposition parties weren't consulted properly on that nomination. And the Liberals are trying to shove the commissioner they want down the opposition party's throat and the public's throat without proper consultation, which is required by the law. The Liberals also chose this new lobbying commissioner through a secretive PMO, Prime Minister's Office and Cabinet-controlled process. She's already met behind closed doors in secret with them during an interview and screening process. Who knows what conversations they've had? It's totally improper, very dangerous that the Trudeau cabinet are choosing their own judges of transparency, ethics, lobbying, even elections, and they're also choosing the RCMP commissioner the same way. So that, you know, and that's the police force that enforces our key anti-corruption laws. So, yeah, we have conflicts. It's just rife with conflicts of interest. And the opposition parties, the NDP specifically, is thankfully pushing back on the Liberals choosing their own judges and watchdogs. And hopefully they'll be able to push back enough to stop them from appointing a bunch of lapdogs to these key democracy safeguard positions.
Now, speaking of concentration of power, the Prime Minister is meeting again in China with Xi Jinping, the President of China, and others in the Chinese government. What concerns do you have about this trip?
Well, we've just learned from a Global Mail report that lots of MPs and senators have been accepting fully paid trips from the Chinese government and business associations with direct connections to the Chinese government over the past 10 years, more than 30 trips in total. And those are not ethical. You should be paying trips yourself if you're going to do research as an MP or a senator. And overall, the conservatives, the Harper conservatives, started off very wary of the Chinese government, and then they changed their tune, started negotiating, and actually negotiated a investment agreement. There hasn't been a full free trade deal negotiated. The Trudeau government was rushing into it. Looks like they're slowing down a bit. Hopefully they are, because the Chinese government and Chinese society overall do not have laws that protect workers, environment, consumers. It's a corrupt system, one-party state, and their companies, because they're so huge and state-supported, will wipe out our companies if they're allowed to get in here and do free trade with us. As well, likely, they're going to corrupt all sorts of processes here, because they're doing that around the world, by, especially in Africa, buying off governments. They don't have any ethical basis for how they do international business. So our government should be very, very hesitant. It will not only be bad for the economy, it'll be bad for our democracy to get into a relationship with China where they are wanting to engage with and have influence over Canadian government officials. The former head of CSIS has warned about this for years, and no one's paying attention, unfortunately, to his warning in the federal government.
That was my interview with Duff Conacher of Democracy Watch. For more information, go to democracywatch.ca to learn what it is doing to stop corruption and cronyism and how you can get involved. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Wally Buono, who will coach one more year for the BC Lions in 2018. Buono, the winningest coach in Canadian football history, relinquished the general manager's job to Ed Hervey, who was the architect of the Edmonton Eskimos' 2015 Grey Cup win. The 2017 Grey Cup champion Toronto Argonauts showed yet again that you can go from the outhouse one year to the penthouse the next in the CFL. While Buono and Hervey could pull off a similar miracle in 2018, the long-term future of the Black and Orange rests on owner David Brayley. Brayley rescued the Lions in 1997, but 20 years later, the Lions are facing declining attendance and declining sponsorship amid a massive changing demographic in Metro Vancouver. There are also questions about the future of football, because science is showing us what playing the game does to the brain. The team is in the good hands of Buono and Hervey, but it is time that Brayley found a new owner who can navigate the company through stormy times. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for another week on the Breaker.News podcast. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas. Email bob@thebreaker.news. Again, the email is bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. Our mission is to tell you what you don't know and tell you what governments and corporations don't want you to know. In the last few weeks, we broke stories like how a 20-acre Richmond farm that was worth less than $85,000 sold for more than $9 million. We told you about how Diane Watts has tried to reboot her struggling BC Liberal leadership campaign, and about the only BC Liberal who was charged in the triple delete scandal and how he has resurfaced in clandestine fashion. For more information on how you can support TheBreaker.News, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week, have a safe and happy week.